and are saying to yourself, you know, you were hoping perhaps to get like, you know, a lacrosse match or, you know, a session on the benefits of static record cleaners, you know, a little call-in talk show or something, and you're wondering why you should stay tuned for this kind of ponderous stuff. A very good example is all around us right now, which is the eruption recently of information that has been sort of dubbed by the press, you know, Irangate, Contragate, or, you know, Iran amok, or whatever, you know, all these names they're trying to come up with it. But the central facts are that a lot of things about the conduct of foreign policy in this country, in this supposedly or putatively democratic country, have sort of come oozing to the surface from you know, passing up through this this veneer of respectability, and some people are honestly surprised. Now, of course, one step beyond listeners, our listeners up here at KFJC and people who listen to Mae Brussel and other people doing this kind of work, of course, are not surprised at all. As a matter of fact, many of them knew it already and are more surprised at the surprise of others. But the facts are that these things are going on. They're not hidden. They are not occult in the sense of the word meaning, you know, hidden or in the dark where you can't find it. These are things that are happening, many cases in broad daylight and being reported in the mainstream news media. But if you don't follow the media carefully, if you don't put stories together from different media, you know, from radio, from books, from magazines, newspapers, if you don't combine these things and if you don't follow the stories over time, the entire picture remains hidden. You only see a little snippet here. Somebody gets killed here. Somebody over here gets arraigned on charges of, you know, smuggling weapons. Somebody else over here is being investigated for financial dealings. And, you know, these things taken separately mean virtually nothing. But when you know the players and you know the people's names and you know where they've been, you see that oftentimes, not always, but many times, these are all single parts of larger cases. And in fact, the Iran-Contragate thing going on now is just such a thing. And we're hearing not only about the illegal arms shipments to Iran, which is really small potatoes, but we're beginning to see a little more public knowledge of such things as the allegations that America's foreign policy front man, in this case the Contras, dealing in drugs. Well, a lot of people are shocked at the mere concept that the Contras would deal drugs, you know, these people that we're giving money to. Well, as we're going to talk about tonight, one of the mainstream avenues of covert foreign policy in the United States for many, many years, about 30 years now, has been the use of the narcotics trade to fund and support American foreign policy, covert foreign policy, below the level of the democratic debate. And we're going to be looking at that in depth. And this has been going on for a long time. So if you're somebody who's been paying attention to the Iran-Nicaraguan affair and saying, gee, I wonder if that could really be true, well, if you listen to this and you tape it and you put it away, then you will have some information on your side that will suggest not only is it quite possibly true, but things like it have been going on for so long that it's virtually an institution in this country. And you'll be much better prepared to deal with the blizzard of misinformation that is issuing out of Washington right now.
Speaking of the Iranagua, or whatever you want to call it, Iran-Contragate, one of the things that has loomed very large in the background of that case is the primary involvement of our intelligence services in narcotics trafficking, and that is the subject of tonight's broadcast. And once again, reiterating what we said at the beginning, this program is intended for taping off the air and subsequent use as an audio study resource. This is not intended for casual listening, so if you have not already begun doing so, please tape this program off the air if you're in a position to do so, because we're about to get into the meat of the broadcast. Now, specifically, tonight, this is the third of our Radio Free America programs, probably going to be five, it looks like, at this point, because we still haven't gotten to Klaus Barbie and some of the cocaine connections. But and then we have to knock off the Age of Psychedelia, which also came from the intelligence services. So this is the third of our broadcasts in the series dealing with the involvement of the U.S. intelligence agencies in the narcotics traffic. And what we're going to do to this evening specifically is take a look at, among other things, the Drug Enforcement Administration, its use not only as a cover for the Central Intelligence Agency, but its use as, I guess you could say, the Drug Enforcement Administration, not the Drug Law Enforcement Administration, but rather enforcing the drug trade, not combating it, but affecting monopolies and regulating the trade, I think is the word I'm looking for, not attempting to stamp it out, or at least not in the way that most people think. We're going to take a look at An interesting case. The first thing we're going to be taking a look at this evening is an interesting case from a criminal syndicate called The Company, quote unquote. Now, many people who are familiar with the intelligence services in this country will recognize that The Company is a standard reference by CIA insiders to the Central Intelligence Agency. The question that we're going to be asking, sort of implicitly with the information we're about to present, is The Company, quote-unquote, an arms and drug smuggling ring? And the interrelationship between the arms traffic and the drug traffic is one of the things we focused on primarily in our last broadcast. And what we're going to be asking is basically, is The Company part of The Company? And we're also going to take a look at an assassination, possibly two assassinations, involving elements of The Company, quote-unquote. That is to say, the criminal syndicate, which may or may not be, we obviously think it is, part of the CIA, or at least elements thereof. And the first thing we're going to be hearing here is literally part of the KFJC archives. This is a program called I shouldn't say it's now defunct, it's still aired on a couple of other stations, but on KFJC, a now-defunct program known as Hard Rain. This basically was this was part of the inspiration for our archive format. It was a half-hour-long program, which I did some years back, and many, many programs of which are now in our archive shows. This is a program done originally on 6/13/82, June 13th, 1982, and unfortunately, the articles which are contained in this particular tape are somewhere in our archives, but buried after one of a number of different moves that we had to effect. We do live in apartments, and we move around, and somewhere they are buried in a box, I think, somewhere in my house. However, fortunately, we did get this stuff on tape, so rather than having to disembowel my entire residence, we're in a position to give this to you via tape.
Plus, you have this wonderful living example of why it's important to tape these things,
mm-hmm.
because our newspaper articles and books are perishable, just like tapes are, but you can get more information onto a small tape and hang onto it and put it in a safe place than you can with 7,000 newspaper articles stacked in boxes or in filing cabinets. Or whatever.
I know roughly where the articles are, but it just wasn't possible to get at them at this point. So what you're going to be hearing is about 15 or 20 minutes of a tape from an old show that we used to have here on KFJC and which is still heard on a couple of other stations in the Bay Area. It's called Hard Rain, the show is. This is a program about The Company, and this is Hard Rain, the program from June 13th, 1982. Anyway, the first of the articles that we're going to be dealing with tonight is going to introduce you to The Company and some of their activities. Now, the following story comes from the San Francisco Chronicle on April 28th, 1982. And this story is Dateline Fresno. It's an article by Bill Wallace, who's a Chronicle correspondent. It's Dateline Fresno, and it's entitled Story of Spies, Stolen Arms, and Drugs. The story reads as follows. A federal judge here began hearing testimony yesterday in a case involving spies, drug dealers, gun runners, and a shadowy group known to its own members as The Company. The defendants in the case, former Air Force Master Sergeant Larry Earl Bryant and inventor Alvin Snaper, are accused of stealing specialized military equipment, some of which is classified, from the top security U.S. Naval Weapons Station at China Lake in the Mojave Desert. Bryant was indicted on 4 counts of receiving embezzled property, 2 counts of conspiracy, and 1 count of embezzlement. Snaper was accused of 2 counts of conspiracy, 1 count of embezzlement, and 1 count of receiving embezzled property. Both men have pleaded not guilty to the charges. U.S. District Judge Edward Dean Price is hearing the case without a jury, and the trial is expected to last about 2 weeks. Taken from the base were 9 infrared sniper scopes, a television camera for taking pictures in darkness, 1,500 rounds of small arms tracer ammunition for night combat, a 5-foot remote-controlled helicopter, and secret components from the radar unit of a Sidewinder guided missile. Federal agents say some of the stolen equipment was going to be used to make electronic equipment for drug smugglers, and some was traded to drug smugglers in Colombia for marijuana. According to documents filed in the case, Bryant, 42, is a retired Air Force Master Sergeant from St. Louis, Missouri, who once worked at China Lake developing devices to counter foreign radar systems. Snaper was described as an inventor from Las Vegas. The Company, the drug smuggling organization to which police say Bryant and Snaper belong, apparently took its name from jargon for the CIA. The organization reputedly has about 300 members, many of them former military men or ex-police officers, and nearly $30 million worth of assets, including planes, ships, and real estate. Federal drug agents say the organization has imported billions of dollars worth of narcotics from Latin America and also was involved in gun running and mercenary operations. 25 reputed members of the group were indicted by the federal grand jury in Fresno last year on charges ranging from importing narcotics for sale to stealing classified armaments. The indictment did not name the company itself, however. Snaper and Bryant are the first defendants to stand trial on the charges in the Fresno indictment. According to the indictment, Larry Bryant and several other men police say are associated with the company took the military equipment from China Lake between January and October of 1979. Five of the night scopes were ultimately discovered in Snaper's garage in Las Vegas, and another one turned up when police raided a Lexington, Kentucky warehouse Bradley F. Bryant had rented under a pseudonym. Bradley Bryant is Larry Bryant's cousin and a man police say is one of the ringleaders of the company. He is being held in lieu of $1 million bond at a prison in Elgin, Illinois, awaiting trial on federal charges of selling $250,000 worth of marijuana to undercover narcotics agents. A sixth scope was found in the wreckage of a plane that crashed off the coast of Colombia. Authorities say the plane was on a drug smuggling mission when it crashed. The other three scopes disappeared entirely, as have the radar components and the remote-controlled helicopter. There have been several recent incidents apparently connected with the case. Last month, Andrew Carter Thornton II, one of the men who had pleaded guilty in the Fresno case, was shot two times in the chest at point-blank range by an unknown assailant as he walked out of a restaurant in Lexington, Kentucky. Thornton, a former narcotics officer, survived, but only because he was wearing a bulletproof vest. There have been no arrests in the shooting, and police say they have no suspects. In January, Gene Berry, a state prosecutor in Charlotte Harbor, Florida, was shot to death as he answered his door. Earlier this month, police arrested Bonnie Kelly as Berry's murderer. Kelly's husband, Wallace McClure Mike Kelly, is a suspected member of the company who pleaded guilty in the Fresno case last month. Charlotte County Sheriff Glenn Saper said the Berry slaying, while not related to the China Lake thefts, was a company assassination accomplished with the help of the group's members. Florida law enforcement officials say that Charles V. Harrelson, a convicted slayer indicted this month for the 1979 murder of U.S. District Judge John H. Wood in El Paso, is also a member of the company, unquote, and a close associate of Wallace Kelly. Police said Jamil Jimmy Chagra, a convicted drug dealer who is an indicted co-conspirator in the Wood assassination case, once hired Bradley Bryant's private security firm, staffed by reputed members of the company, as a bodyguard service. Well, that's a very complex tangle of names and places and events. I'd like to take a minute to outline that before we discuss the case, or discuss that article, and move on to some more articles about the case. Some of the names that we heard. Keep in mind Alvin Snaper. Alvin Snaper is the very talented inventor who, along with Mr. Larry Bryant, was indicted for allegedly stealing some very sophisticated weaponry from the China Lake Naval Weapons Center that in the Mojave Desert. Now, Larry Bryant's cousin, Bradley Bryant, is currently in prison in Elgin, Illinois, awaiting under indictment, on marijuana smuggling charges. You heard in this story about a fellow named Andrew Carter Thornton II, who pleaded guilty in the Fresno case. Remember, Snaper and Larry Bryant are the first two to stand trial in the case. Well, Mr. Andrew Carter Thornton II pleaded guilty in the case and then was shot in the chest at point-blank range, although survived thanks to a bulletproof vest. Nobody has been indicted. No suspects have been uncovered in the case. You heard about Gene Berry, a Florida prosecutor who was murdered by a woman named Bonnie Kelly, who's the wife of Wallace Kelly, who's a fellow who is in the company. We also heard about a guy named Charles V. Harrelson, who's indicted for the assassination of federal judge John Wood, the only federal judge ever assassinated in the line of duty, by the way. And Charles V. Harrelson, who has been indicted for shooting Judge Wood, is a member of the company, and a fellow who is under indictment with him, a guy named Jamil Jimmy Chagra, once hired Bradley Bryant's private security firm, which apparently employs members of the company, unquote. A couple things I'd like to point out. Long-time listeners to Hard Rain will recall that in February of 1981, we discussed the company. We read an article that
was from the San Francisco Examiner in December of 1980. And that article dealt with the company, and it at that time, the weaponry stolen from China Lake was not, and the radar system stolen from China Lake was not to be traded for drugs and, or given to drug smugglers. One of the reasons that one of the people who had helped smuggle the stuff out of China Lake gave for having brought this out, apparently this person was told that this was going to be used by the CIA and exchanged in Libya for some Soviet-built radar equipment, I guess, that had been given to the Libyans and which was going to be exchanged and given to the CIA for this stuff. So keep that in mind, that this information maintaining that the China Lake weaponry was to be given to drug smugglers or swapped for marijuana marks a significant change from the facts of the case or the information about the case as we first saw it in December of 1980, or as we saw it in February of 81. This article was from late December of 1980. Now, you'll recall that in that very same Hard Rain broadcast from February of 1981, we took a look at the strange and ominous doings of the Turple Wilson Korkola wing of the CIA. We took a look at some Jack Anderson material, which later exploded into a very huge, very big story in the New York Times and all of the other papers. This concerned the activities of ex-unquote CIA men and special forces in training and arming Muammar Gaddafi's security people and terrorists and so forth. And it appeared pretty clear from those two stories. It appeared to be pretty clear that basically these people were not ex-CIA at all, that they were still with the company. And among the activities, among the bases that were touched by Turple Wilson Korkola and company, among those bases was China Lake. They were involved with the smuggling of weaponry from China Lake to Libya. This was part of the Turple Wilson Korkola scam. So keep in mind the interesting coincidence here between the company, unquote, and Turple Wilson Korkola, Libya, etc. Now, one of the most important connections to the company here concerns the assassination of federal judge John Wood in Texas. Now, you'll recall that Charles V. Harrelson, who's been indicted on the case, is a member of the company. His co-indictee in the case, Jimmy Chagra, once used Bradley Bryant's security service, which basically is staffed by people from the company, for bodyguards. Now, keep that in mind, because a very significant connection appeared concerning the company and the assassination of Judge Wood. This story appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle on Thursday, April 22nd of 1982. It's a one-sentence story, only one sentence, and this is the only paper I even saw it in. It's a UPI story, Dateline New Orleans, and headlined Perjury Charges. It reads as follows. Joseph P. Marcello, Jr., 58, the brother of reputed mafia boss Carlos Marcello, surrendered to federal authorities yesterday on charges he lied to a grand jury investigating the assassination of a federal judge in Texas. Now, it was we saw at the top of the broadcast, the assassination of Judge Wood is the only assassination of a federal judge that has ever taken place. No judge has ever been offed in connection with his work. No federal judge, that is. And so when the article that we just saw makes a very oblique reference to the assassination of a federal judge in Texas, that is definitely Judge Wood. That's whose assassination this refers to. Now, this is significant. Carlos Marcello is a name that crops up frequently in the investigation of what one might call the underbelly of the United States. He has massive mafia connections. He's also done work for the CIA in the past. Longtime Hard Rain listeners will recall that in the early summer of 1980, about 2 years ago, we dealt with Mr. Carlos Marcello in connection with the assassination of President Kennedy. The House Select Committee on Assassinations named Marcello and his associate David Ferry as probable conspirators in the assassination of President Kennedy. That came as no surprise to people that had been studying the JFK assassination, because certainly Carlos Marcello's name is one of those that crops up most frequently, and it certainly appears that he was involved in some way with the assassination of President Kennedy. So keep in mind the brother of Carlos Marcello is being indicted on perjury in connection with the Judge Wood assassination case, because his brother, Carlos Marcello, is a very, very important figure.
All right, and we are back live in the studios at KFJC. This is Nip Tuck with Dave Emery, and of course what you just heard was a segment of a Hard Rain broadcast from June 13, 1982. And that was to introduce you to the topic tonight. For those of you who tuned in after the beginning of the broadcast in our introduction. This is the third of a five-part series on the connection between intelligence and the international narcotics trade. And what this particular tape was referring to, or was an introduction to, was the strange situation of The Company, a drugs and guns outfit known as The Company, which also just happens to be, coincidentally or otherwise, which is what we are trying to ascertain, a well-known nickname among its initiates for the CIA, or for CIA. And what we're going to be examining is how some of the folks in The Company, the guns and drugs operation, connect up with some other people who are known confidants, intimates, or whatever you might want to say, of the real-life, honest-to-God, Langley, Virginia CIA.
Right, and what we're going to be taking a look at in particular now is one of the company, quote-unquote, operations, namely the assassination of Federal Judge John Wood in 1979, the only federal judge so far, at least the only federal judge that's on record. I've noted some interesting apparent heart attacks of judges, but the only assassination shooting of a judge so far. Basically now, reviewing a couple of the pieces of information that will relate to what we're talking about here, it's worth noting, among other things, the number of people who have been assassinated in connection with various investigations into the company. Members of the company, key witnesses, a prosecutor in Florida, or district attorney, I can't remember which, named Barry, was shot at. And as we're going to see, and all the mortality rate in and around this arms and drug smuggling ring, which appears, at least from circumstantial evidence, to be part of the U.S. intelligence apparatus, well, the mortality rate has been very, very high. And recall also that the high-tech weaponry being smuggled from China Lake Naval Weapons Center, which is an extremely high-security area. I mean, you just don't waltz in there and walk out with a purchase order for, Starlight sniper scopes and things of that type. Keep in mind that that was the area from which Messrs. Triple and Wilson got much of their high-tech weaponry to send to our boy Mohamed Gaddafi in Libya. Now, as we've looked at, Turple and Wilson's Libyan operation was not an ex-U.S. intelligence operation at all. If indeed it was not CIA, then it was certainly working for one of our other intelligence services, either the NSC, the NSA, the DIA, or one of the others. The circumstantial evidence is that there may have very well been a connection between the company, quote-unquote, and the Turple Wilson operation. The first report on the company had the weaponry going to Libya, and then it said that it was going to drug smugglers in South America. Both may, in fact, have been true, but the China Lakes connection here is very, very important. Remember the high mortality rate in connection with this, and also, and not unimportantly, remember the fact that the Marcello clan has cropped up in connection with the investigation into the assassination of Judge John Wood, because, in a sense, our takeoff point at this juncture for the bulk of the discussion this evening is going to be some of the information that surfaced in connection with the assassination of Judge John Wood. And remember Joseph Marcello, Carlos Marcello's brother, he was being represented by a very, very interesting figure and a very important name on the American far right.
Now, before we get to the article, one more thing. Wanted to take it out to macro focus again for a moment and then bring it back down to the article. As Dave mentioned, the China Lake case, of which the company is supposedly involved in the theft or the smuggling out of these weapons, and as Dave also mentioned, the China Lake weapons repository is also linked intimately to the Turple Wilson gang, or whatever you want to call them, and their shipments of arms originally to Libya, also possibly to Central and South America. At the beginning of tonight's broadcast, I made a sort of a larger point about one of the reasons that we're interested in the intelligence and narcotics connection, because of the surfacing of these allegations within the Iran/Nicaragua case. Now, interestingly enough, not only, of course, is Ed Wilson, just by his very the people he hangs out with, connected in a larger sense to most of these intelligence scams going on right now, but he and Richard Secord and some other people are very explicitly connected to the arms shipments to Iran and others. So, again, a connection here between the China Lake case and the company, and Ed Wilson was certainly a company employee in the sense of the CIA meaning of the word, but a connection between Ed Wilson and the China Lake case. Also now Ed Wilson and his buddies connected seemingly certainly to the Libyan case, also connected to the Iran case, means that this five-year-old murder now that we're talking about may be more intimately connected to the current goings-on than anybody has previously thought. Now, again, Dave mentioned Joseph Marcello, the infamous Marcello family.
One quick reference, Nip. The China Lake connection was actually discussed in Radio Free America number 4, our program about the Triple Wilson operation. Excuse me, and then also brought up again very briefly. And actually, maybe we only read the headline, but then in RFA number 22. So if people would like to go back and review in a hard way the China Lake connection to Triple Wilson, those are the RFA references.
Indeed. Now, the Marcello family, as mentioned, a rather interesting family. Carlos Marcello, of course, intimately connected with the drug trade through his mafia connections. And also, of course, a longtime name that has been mentioned in conjunction with the Kennedy assassination time and time again, which, of course, we will also be talking about later in the broadcast.
Right, and again, a quick archive reference. Guns of November, number 1, we discussed the Marcello connection and his relationship with David Ferry.
Now, the other name that Dave mentioned is the name of a well-known attorney who has just recently shuffled off the mortal coil, and I'm sure you will recognize that name when we get to it. The article that we are reading is from the New Orleans Times-Picayune for Tuesday, September 21st, 1982. This article was originally provided to us back in 1982 by Ted Rubenstein, a researcher who has done a lot of good work and shared it with us and who we have talked about before. The headline is Marcello Kin's Trial Postponed. Kin, of course, K-I-N apostrophe S. The dateline is San Antonio. It's a UPI Wire story. A perjury trial for New Orleans restaurateur Joseph Marcello was postponed Monday because his attorney is out of the country. Federal Judge H.F. Hippo Garcia set no other date for Marcello's trial, which was to have begun with jury selection Tuesday. Attorney Roy Cohn asked for the delay because he had to be in Europe. Marcello, the leader of reputed organized crime leader Carlos Marcello of New Orleans, is accused of lying to a grand jury about his knowledge of the 1979 assassination of Federal Judge John Wood of San Antonio. Although neither Marcello is accused in the slaying, federal prosecutors say they have a tape of Joseph Marcello telling someone he knew who was involved. Quote, "These are the people that connected with the killing of the judge in El Paso," unquote, Marcello said. "The judge is dead. This was their three people," unquote. But when asked about the tape in June 1980 before a grand jury investigating Wood's death, Marcello refused to identify his voice or acknowledge the conversation, prosecutors said. The tape was made at Carlos Marcello's office in connection with the federal BRILAB investigation, B-R-I-L-A-B.
All righty. Now, Roy Cohn, of course, is one of the luminaries of the American... was. He's dead now of AIDS. Was one of the luminaries of the American far right, perhaps best known for his work as the counsel to Joe McCarthy, the late senator from Wisconsin, who, in essence, trashed an entire... generation of American politicos whose politics fell anywhere to the left of far right, and was responsible for almost single-handedly driving the American political spectrum several clicks to the right through his investigations. Roy Cohn was his notorious chief counsel. Beyond that, Roy Cohn has worked with such organizations as Western Goals, the organization which was involved in a very notorious police spying case a couple of years back, and which was headed up by the late Larry McDonald, who died in the crash of Korean Airlines Flight 007. Also in Radio Free America, in Farewell America, a book put out by the French Intelligence Service about the Kennedy assassination, Roy Cohn is implicated in the assassination of President Kennedy. Now, that's interesting, of course, because he's representing the brother of one of the organized crime figures who, in all probability, was also a participant in the Kennedy assassination. There were a number of organized crime links to the assassination of John Kennedy. Carlos Marcello appears to have been one of them. Now, it's interesting that this whole thing, perjury case cropped up in connection with the assassination of Judge John Wood, because there were allegations by none other than the convicted assassin of Judge John Wood that, in fact, the case connected up with the assassination of President Kennedy. Again, research credit for the following story goes to Ted Rubenstein. This is from the San Francisco Examiner of Tuesday, November 2nd of 1982. It's a UPI story, Dateline San Antonio, Texas, and headlined, "Witness says hitman is killer of judge JFK, Judge, JFK. A convicted hitman claimed he killed both President John F. Kennedy and U.S. District Judge John H. Wood, Jr., and planned to use that information to bargain with the government. A lawyer who pleaded guilty to conspiracy charges in the case testified today. Joe Chagra, C-H-A-G-R-A, said Charles Harrelson, H-A-R-R-E-L-S-O-N, insisted he had killed Kennedy and even drew a map of the area in Dallas where Kennedy was shot in 1963. Chagra said Harrelson also told him that he hoped the information could get him a life sentence in a comfortable federal prison instead of the Texas penitentiary. If he made a deal with the government, he could clear up the Kennedy matter as well as clear up the Judge Wood matter, Chagra said. Although Harrelson claimed to have been cleared by a 1980 grand jury in Wood's 1979 shooting death, he said he could still prove he killed Wood with, quote, an ace in the hole, the murder weapon itself, Chagra said. In the same visit with Chagra, September 24, 1980, Harrelson drew a second map of the area east of Dallas where, he said, the rifle he used to kill Wood was tossed from a bridge. Chagra reproduced the map later, and the FBI found it in a search of his home in February of 1981. So it's intriguing that the confessed assassin of Judge John Wood also has confessed to being one of the fire team that dispatched President Kennedy in Dallas, Texas. And there have been a number of follow-up articles about the possibility that Harrelson may have been one of a number of riflemen in Dallas, Texas. And there are some interesting connecting links between Charles Harrelson and some of the people, in particular some of the organized crime people who not only figure in the background of the assassination of President Kennedy, but who also are going to be front and center in our discussion about the interrelationship between the intelligence services, organized crime, and the narcotics traffic.
All right, now one of the things that we're going to examine here for a moment is we examine the strange case of Charles V. Harrelson, the man who says that he was one of the assassins of John F. Kennedy. We're going to talk about one of the most famous bits of arcana in the study of the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and that's the Dealey Plaza Tramps, as they have been called. And there was a brief flurry that many of you out there who have followed political matters may have heard of for a while, where there were strong suggestions that the Tramps were in fact Frank Sturgis and E. Howard Hunt of Watergate fame. That largely came to naught, although there certainly were some rather interesting similarities between one of the men and E. Howard Hunt in terms of just sheer facial looks. But we're going to look at another viewpoint on that in light of Charles Harrison's confession. This article originally appeared in the Cover-Ups newsletter of July 1982, published by Gary Mack in Fort Worth, Texas.
And research credit for this also goes to Ted Rubenstein.
And the article is headlined, "Is Kennedy's Assassin Sitting in Texas Jail?" We're going to skip down to partway into the article where he discusses the three, quote, tramps and how they made their way into the annals of Kennedy assassination research. They're talking about events that occurred right after the shooting of President Kennedy in Dealey Plaza. For those of you who don't know, by the way, there's a railroad track running right alongside, and this is the center for a lot of this activity. A Union Pacific train dispatcher named Lee Bowers said he saw three men sneak into an empty railroad car in the Union rail yards just behind the Texas School Book Depository moments after the assassination. Bowers had the train halted when it began to move out of the yards and summoned Dallas police. Several policemen rousted the three men out of the rail car at gunpoint and marched them back past the book depository to the Dallas County Sheriff's Office, located on the east side of Dealey Plaza. At least two newsmen took photographs of the men as they were marched through the plaza under armed guard. However, once in Dallas police custody, the men officially disappeared. They were never booked, and any fingerprints or names that were taken have never been made public. These three men remain among only five or six people that the FBI failed to identify who were on the scene at the time of the assassination. For 19 years, there has been considerable speculation as to the identities and activities of these three men. Although they were called tramps by police, photos show the men had recent haircuts, shined shoes, and old but unsoiled clothes. In photographs, they hardly appeared to be tramps. Skipping down in the article. And they're talking about the guy who wrote this article took a picture of Harrelson to a graphics expert to ask him, after Harrelson's confession, if he could possibly be one of the men in one of the three tramps that were photographed by news photographers. Jack White, a Fort Worth graphics expert and assassination researcher, who testified before the House Select Committee on Assassination, told me, meaning Jim Morris who wrote the article, told me he is now convinced that Harrelson is the younger tramp. Quote, "I have done various photographic comparison tests and everything matches. The hair, the nose, the ear. It's Harrelson in my mind," said White, a longtime advertising man here. In addition to the photo comparisons, there is yet more evidence to indicate that Harrelson did indeed play a role in the presidential assassination. When arrested, Harrelson was carrying the business card of R.D. Matthews. In subsequent interviews, Harrelson admitted being a close friend of Matthews and said he looked up to Matthews as a father. Russell Douglas Matthews is a former Dallas character who was close to Dallas nightclub owner Jack Ruby, the man who shot down accused presidential assassin Lee Harvey Oswald. Matthews was described by the House Assassinations Committee as a man, quote, actively engaged in criminal activity since the 1940s. The committee also documented Matthews' connections with Dallas gamblers Lewis McWillie and Benny Binion, both of whom were Ruby's close friends. The committee also developed evidence that Matthews was in contact with associates of Mafia chieftain Santos Traficante of Florida. Excuse me. Matthews was linked by the committee to Fort Worth and Dallas underworld characters such as Hollis DeLois Green, Jetty Bass, Nick Cassio, and James Todd. These men, as well as Matthews, were acquaintances of Harrelson. In a sidelight, Matthews was best man at the marriage of a Dallas underworld character named George McGann to a woman named Beverly Oliver. Beverly Oliver, a nightclub entertainer, was close friends with several of Jack Ruby's employees and was in Dealey Plaza filming the Kennedy motorcade at the time of the assassination. Mrs. Oliver, now an evangelist using a different name, said two FBI agents took her unprocessed film, shot from the south side of Elm Street, and promised to return the original print after it was developed. She now states that she never saw or heard of the film again.
Now, a couple of interesting points to make in connection with this particular article. Obviously, it's interesting that there is this series of connections between Charles Harrelson and some of the organized crime figures who crop up in the background of the assassination of John Kennedy, or, as is the case with Jack Ruby, in the foreground of the John F. Kennedy assassination. It's interesting, too, that there are connecting links between Charles Harrelson and Santos Traficante. In other words, connecting links meaning a set of mutual associations. Santos Traficante, again, we covered this in Guns of November number 1, the first of our archive shows about President Kennedy's assassination. Santos Traficante was known to have boasted or stated to a fellow Cuban exile named Jose Alemán that, quote, President Kennedy is going to be hit in the middle of ranting and raving about how bad it was that the Kennedys were down on Jimmy Hoffa. Santos Traficante stated that President Kennedy was going to be hit and that a nut would do the job. Anyway, Santos Traficante said, after Jose Alemán expressed the opinion that President Kennedy would probably be reelected, Santos Traficante said, "No, Jose, you're wrong. He is going to be hit." Now, that's an interesting statement for Santos Traficante to make, because when he was subpoenaed to appear before a congressional subcommittee, he was obviously terrified to appear before that subcommittee, perhaps because fellow mafiosi Sam Giancana and Johnny Roselli were murdered in connection with their testimony. Roselli just after testifying, Giancana just before. Santos Traficante is a very, very hardened individual, not somebody who would blanch at something as relatively innocuous as testifying normally. So it's worth bearing in mind the probable connections between Santos Traficante and the assassination of President Kennedy, because Santos Traficante and his links to, among others, Richard Nixon and the Central Intelligence Agency is going to be one of the people who's front and center in our broadcast this evening. I would also state that although the reproduction of the picture, the mugshot of Charles Harrelson shown in the cover-ups issue that Nip just read you, is not terribly good, I have seen other photographs comparing the large tramp, the young tramp as he was known, he was the youngest of the three tramps, and Charles Harrelson, on the basis, for example, of photographs in Penn Jones' newsletter, The Continuing Inquiry, I personally, and obviously this is just my opinion, I'm absolutely convinced that Charles Harrelson is indeed the third tramp, the young tramp. Not terribly skilled researchers have suggested that young tramp was Frank Sturgis. It's been pretty positively proved that was not Frank Sturgis. I am personally convinced that Charles Harrelson was indeed the so-called young tramp, one of the three men arrested. It's worth noting that Lee Bowers was one of the people we covered in Guns of November number 2, one of the mysterious deaths, or perhaps not so mysterious deaths, in connection with the Kennedy assassination.
We should just remind you, Lee Bowers was the railroad switching man who caught the tramps and called the police and had the tramps taken off from whence they subsequently disappeared from the Dallas police station.
And again, I think the comparative photographic evidence of Charles Harrelson Harrelson's mugshot and the youngest and largest of the three tramps is very, very compelling. However, a separate but distinct, but related question, rather, is whether or not, although I'm convinced he was one of the tramps, whether or not he was actually a member of the fire team that dispatched President Kennedy is another question. It seems probable that the three tramps played some role in the assassination, but they may very well have not been the actual trigger men. That it remains to be seen. I'm not saying that Charles Harrelson was the trigger man. I am convinced he was the youngest of the tramps. So, whether or not the tramps were in any way involved in the actual shooting has yet to be proved. I think that should be stated because a lot of people have automatically assumed that those tramps were some of the fire team, and that is not necessarily the case. I am convinced that Harrelson was indeed the youngest tramp, and whether or not he was a member of the fire team remains to be seen. As we like to say, food for thought and grounds for further research. Now, it's worth noting, again, hearkening back to the Hard Rain tape segment that we began with, that there's been a lot of mortality in connection with the investigation into this arms and drug smuggling ring called The Company, which may very well have been part of the U.S. intelligence apparatus. When members of The Company came to trial, there were a number of death threats and alleged death threats going around. One of them was a threat against the judge hearing one of the cases. Research credit once again for this article goes to Ted Rubenstein. This is from the Fresno Bee of July 9th of 1982. It's by Royal Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, a Fresno Bee staff writer, and it's headlined, Special Protection Given Judge Price After Death Threats. For 4 months, U.S. District Court Judge Edward Dean Price of Fresno has been under round-the-clock guard because of death threats and additional concerns stemming from the 1979 assassination of a federal judge in Texas. Deputy U.S. Marshals are expected to continue providing special protection for Price for about a year, said Mike Nelson, deputy in charge of the U.S. Marshals Office in Fresno. Nelson would not comment on the reasons, but others said Price received death threats in connection with upcoming trials of 25 alleged members of the Nuestra Familia gang. Proceedings against the 25 defendants were moved from Fresno to Sacramento for security reasons, but Price is still handling the cases. Also contributing to the decision, for sources said, was a recent trial in Price's courtroom involving thefts of weapons and other military hardware from China Lake Naval Weapons Center in the Mojave Desert. Federal authorities say one of the defendants in that case, Bradley Bryant, previously worked for drug smuggler Jamil A. Chagra, C-H-A-G-R-A, one of five people indicted for the sniper slaying of U.S. District Judge John Wood Jr. of San Antonio, Texas, in May of 1979. Three federal officials said Bryant put Chagra in touch with the contract killer who fired the fatal rifle shot at Judge Wood, a Kentucky newspaper recently reported. And the threats against Judge Price were not the only threats or not the only assassination plots in connection with the Judge Wood case.
This is a rather interesting little sidelight that originally this article appeared in the East Bay Today, the Oakland Tribune / East Bay Today for Tuesday, October 19th, 1982. The headline is Assassination Offer. And under it, we have this small, interesting, but somewhat incomplete article. It's Dateline San Antonio, Texas. An FBI informer testified Monday that he once was offered $50,000 to kill Charles V. Harrelson, who is on trial, charged with assassinating U.S. District Judge John H. Wood, Jr. Hampton Robinson III, age 34, an admitted former heroin and cocaine addict, who was given methadone before his court appearance, made the statement during his rambling testimony. Harrelson is on trial for the May 29, 1979 killing of Wood. The 63-year-old jurist was shot down outside his San Antonio townhouse. Now, this is interesting. Now, admittedly, the man who made this allegation, as they said, was in the midst of a somewhat rambling testimony and was given methadone before his court appearance. However, mitigating those facts is that, first of all, methadone, from my understanding of those types, the pseudo opiates, is not necessarily the type of drug to lead you to make things up. If anything, it tends to release inhibitions. But my not being a doctor, that certainly can't be taken as gospel. However, what I would say is I don't think the fact that he was given methadone necessarily undermines the validity of his charge, which is at this point, of course, obviously unproved. The other rather interesting thing, though, is that if it is something that he made up, it seems to me that somebody on drugs is going to make up something to tell in court it seems to me they would make up something a little more interesting to the general public or, you know, to people involved than the than an allegation that somebody offered him $50,000 to kill Charles Harrelson, who even at the time when this case was current was not, you know, a tremendously important person and not tremendously significant outside of the intelligence and assassination milieu. So that being the case, we do wonder, reading this article, we noticed that the guy is an FBI informant, but we're curious, it does not mention, and I don't think we've ever found out, who it was exactly who allegedly offered Hampton Robinson $50,000 to kill Charles Harrelson, and at what time and in what situation was he offered that money. So that's something to put into the damper, though, and hang on to for some later point. But as Dave said, there are a lot of deaths and allegations of assassination attempts and things swirling around this case of the company.